Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the MAD podcast. MAD, of course, stands for Mobile Application Development. So as you can imagine, we're going to be talking things mobile application development. Today's guest, we are joined by Sean Merchant, who's had a pretty meteoric rise in the development world. It's a very interesting story. He's got a lot of interesting things to say, a lot of interesting thoughts and opinions, and we'll be finding out some more of those now. So for those who don't already know, Sean Merchant, you are the mobile lead at Panda, right?
Yeah. You make it sound like as if I'm some kind of famous person. If you don't know him, how do you not? I've been on Graham Norton. I've done the works.
Well, I imagine you're a pretty famous character in the mobile world. You certainly got some funny stories that I'm sure people know about.
I sort of hope people don't know me. I feel like that's not a good sign if people did. Like, oh God, it's him. Switch off.
I don't think there's any danger of that today with some of the stories we're going to cover. Right, to kick things off, I mean, what does a mobile lead really entail? What's your sort of day-to-day, sort of daily activities really as a mobile lead?
Ooh, that entails a lot of pretending to do work. seriously. So I oversee... my boss is going to hate me for this. I oversee iOS and Android engineering and iOS and Android engineers.
Yeah.
So I work with the iOS and Android teams to work on what is great coding standards. Uh-huh. What is it that makes their day-to-day fun and enjoyable? Because we work like 8 hours a day, and I don't want to be in a job where I hate those 8 hours a day and I just treat it as a slog, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I don't want my teams to feel like that either, because then that's crap for everyone. So part of my remit of that is to make sure that they're enjoying what they're doing, and if there's issues there, then we fix those and we build a workplace that they do enjoy working in.
Yeah.
And then also trying to find ways in which we can help them be productive and do the best work of their lives.
Uh-huh.
So that's from like an engineering point of view. And then when it comes to engineers, is also to be that line management figure, that horrible, awful thing. and I am that really annoying cliche of, I don't want to be a line manager. I want to be... because it just sounds awful. It sounds like this micromanagery type thing that's like, excuse me, what do you think you're doing? You're in the bathroom for 2 minutes. Like, it should only be what? Like, I don't want to be that. I want to be someone that is there to be a support pillar, right?
Yeah.
I'm there to be that person that you are the expert in your domain.
Sure.
We hire iOS and Android people to be experts in their domain, not code monkeys that get given tickets and put on schedules and all that other crap.
Yeah.
I'm there to be that person that lets these people be experts in their domain and enjoy that domain. And then where they want to grow or develop, to be that person that will get the company credit card and get those tools or conferences for them, or try and find those tools or conferences for them and work with them to develop those skills.
And I suppose you make a good point there, actually. Because, you know, if you're hiring these engineers, you want them to sort of have their own ideas, have their own ways to figure things out without really holding their hands too much throughout the day. I suppose you like to assume they're sort of an expert in their field, and that's why they've sort of got the job in the first place, right?
Yeah, and it's a crazy thing in our industry, and it happens in lots of other industries as well, but like some experiences I have where it's literally, hey, we've hired you to be an iOS engineer. That's my background is iOS engineering.
Yeah.
And I'll sit there, be given a Jira ticket, and I'll be like, implement this. Here's the full spec designs, and write that code and then merge it in and pass it on to the next person.
Yeah.
And that's just bloody depressing.
Yeah.
You feel like you have no sense of control or joy in your work. You end up hate coding. And me being an iOS person, I also really like design stuff. And just having like pre-filled designs given to you is also just crap, because being an engineer, you know some of the bleeding edge stuff that Apple's working on or some of the latest design trends that Apple is horning through their platforms.
Yeah.
And so to not even have any sense of input on that, like, it's crap. And so at Pando, at least, where myself as mobile lead, that's something that we just don't do, because why hire someone just to be a code monkey?
Yeah, exactly.
We want to hire great people that are passionate, fun, and smart, and let them be the experts in their domain.
Yeah.
After all, why are you hiring them otherwise?
Yeah, exactly. No, you make a really good point there. And I think that's just the best way you can really approach management, I suppose. I know you don't like calling it line management or whatever, but I mean, yeah, no, it's just a good practice, I suppose, as a manager.
Well, bloody hope so. That is kind of my job.
I think also, you know, when it comes to that sort of forward way of management, it sort of leaks into the whole culture in general, really, especially in the tech world. And you're seeing it more and more with companies nowadays that are copying sort of this tech way of working, you know, sort of like the Google-esque office, the Facebook, you know, you've got gaming areas and you've got all this stuff going on inside the office. So, you know, it just seems like you guys are quite progressive way, you have a progressive way of doing things, right through sort of management to just general day-to-day activities. It's really cool, though.
Yeah, I mean, just to touch on that, like, from a tech point of view, we are incredibly privileged in really what we get away with. Like, in a bizarre way, like, I would say we are quite a rare industry where when you find the right place, you have a huge sense of control over your work. You have a huge amount of input and can make a lot of change to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, in terms of, like, just our general perks, the fact that, like, we'll have a beanbag in our office and we don't need to come in a suit. Like these really small things that seem so menial and passive, actually they are really significant differences between how we operate as an industry and how other industries operate.
Yeah. And I mean, from your sort of side, was that something that really pushed you in the direction of the tech world? Did you think about that environment when you were sort of decided to be an engineer? Or was it just sort of that just came with it?
Ooh. You know, it's always interesting when you get asked these questions about, like, why did you go into tech or why did you go into mobile engineering? Because you get asked it a lot. It's like an engineer's worst question to get asked. Because you'll get asked it when you do, like, college applications or uni applications. And then, like, when you go for interviews, you get asked that as well. And it's so daunting as a question because it's kind of like you're expected to say, one day on my 14th birthday, when the stars aligned and the moon was in the perfect position, I had this grand epiphany. but it was one of those where you just happened to fall into it. From a background in computers, like, we had a bloody family laptop, and it was a bloody Dell running Windows Vista. Now, as a software engineer, you have to be empathetic to other people's code and other people's output. But Windows Vista was objectively crap. And so we were living our life on Windows Vista. And then the first actual laptop we had, because I'm not counting that as a laptop, that was just objective, like, spinning rust. The first laptop we actually had was a 2007... plastic white MacBook.
Yeah, another one.
And it was beautiful. That it's like one of those old cars that people have and they're like, it's falling apart at the seams, but it's a smooth ride. Like it was just a classic, just vintage piece of kit. And that was beautiful. And then like in schools, like, you have, like, alternating weeks, like week 1, week 2.
Yeah.
And I was like, I should just write an app for that and input the term dates and let it, like, switch between them. And so I looked up at, like, what programming languages I could use to write this. And someone online was like, oh, Objective-C is really easy to make apps with. And that person is a liar, because that is not an easy thing to make apps with. So you can tell the kind of childhood upbringing I had was that my closest friend was Objective-C. That's something up quite bluntly. And so fired up Xcode, got in Objective-C land, interacted with AppKit, and then started building a Mac app to manage my bloody timetable. I sound like such a nerd. And so that was my foray into like the software land. And then the iPhone and iPod Touch grew in adoption. And then I remember getting an iPod Touch, and then I turned that Mac AppKit app of a timetable thingy into an iPod Touch app. And my career was born henceforth. That would be my epiphany moment, was being an absolute nerd and having a timetable app that would automatically switch between week one, week two.
Wow.
I had a lot going for me.
Yeah. I mean, look, you say there wasn't really an epiphany moment, but then you kind of touched on it there. But, you know, there must have been some sort of love for tech before, you know, before you decide and say, right, I'm going to make an app. Because, I mean, look, I liked Apple products, but I never once thought about making that, but I just didn't have the intelligence. So, I mean, you know, was there something, you know, were you already interested in technology, or was it like computer software? What were you sort of interested in that?
I would say it was more born out of hatred. Like, using Windows Vista, I was like, how can something be that bad? How can it be so awful? How can you click on the Internet Explorer icon and then it takes like 2 minutes to open up the browser, and you hear like the fans go off, you can hear the spinning platter like screeching away. And then when we got the Mac, I think that was it. It was just like, hey, I click on Safari and it just opens. Like, that's wild. So it was, I think it was born out of hatred mostly, as most British things are. Things, innovation is born out of contempt.
Yeah, no, that's very true. It's very true. I mean, you briefly mentioned sort of your love for iOS there. What was your love for Apple products? Would you say you're sort of definitely an iOS guy through and through then?
Well, I have made my fair share of criticisms. I would put myself between Apple and FreeBSD.
Yeah, I thought that was the case, sort of the way you spoke about Apple so highly there. I mean, what is it about Apple as a company that you sort of went for it rather than Android? You know, is it the simplicity? For me, it definitely is the simplicity and just the feel of their products. But obviously, I'm not a developer. So what is it sort of for you, from your side, that sort of drew you to Apple rather than anything else?
I would say it would be, and they don't get it right all the time, but it would be the level of care that gets put into that experience that you have with the product. So, like, there's a fantastic classic story about how Steve Jobs was adamant that the Intel Inside stickers would not appear on the MacBook enclosure at all. But you look at like Windows laptops, and they have them all plastered over there. They have like hundreds of stickers, like, oh, it's got Intel everywhere. Pentium this. Whereas like with Macs, you just don't get that, because he's like, why do people want stickers? And then you look at the same with phones, right? So in the early days of phones, like on the front of the phone, you'd have like a giant Nokia logo plastered or a Samsung plastered there. But with iPhone and iPod Touch,
right on the screen.
Yeah. And it just objectively, like, why do I care about this like logo just looking at me all the time? But with the iPhone and iPod, like, it was like, no, why? Who wants to see that distraction all the time? And so that's part of what I enjoy about these platforms, is that it's very much take away all that clutter and nonsense and like obsessive throwing branding in your face, and just clear that all away and let you focus on doing what you want to do.
point, actually. Okay, so, you know, back onto sort of mobile lead at Pando. Obviously, we briefly mentioned what your day-to-day activities are and what you sort of get up to daily. I mean, are you still very much sort of hands-on coding, or is it just mostly sort of management now? Do you still get to code quite a bit?
Oh, yeah, I still get to code. I'll never stop coding. Oh, God, I love coding. Well, I no, every programmer hates programming. It's Stockholm syndrome. We just hate it. We just hate coding, but we do it because we love it as well. But yeah, I program. I still work on the iOS client. A lot of my time is spent coding too.
Enough, actually. I guess it's good you get to sort of code daily, especially if you sound like a passionate guy. You sound like you're very passionate about it. I want to touch on a story now a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, I think we all know the reason why you really are loyal to iOS, and that's because they've been loyal to you, right? They actually, you know, developed a device called the Apple Watch, which went on to save your life on two occasions.
That you should work on TV. That was a very smooth link. Like that just flew in from the previous question, just so beautifully.
So fluid.
There was no interruption. It was beautiful.
We didn't stop for 10 minutes
at
all.
So it was in the last place that I worked. God.
Go on.
We were working late one night and we were doing regression, and I had this spot that I liked, which was like this deep window ledge, and you could open the windows, look out onto like the lights of London. It was beautiful, and you get the breeze across your... Oh, it's just the perfect place. And yeah. I may or may not have had a couple of drinks to pass the time of the evening, as you do, and I leant a bit too hard on the open window frame. And then fell a couple of stories to the ground.
Oh,
and
a couple of stories.
My watch then like does the really aggressive tapping and goes, "Looks like you've had a hard fall. Should I call an ambulance?" And then like you see the countdown going down. And I'm just laid there, like sprawled out over the floor, just like seeing the watch out the corner of my eye. And then above me, I see like colleagues looking out the window, not knowing what to do.
Oh, no.
And then, yeah, the watch calls an ambulance. They come and scrape me off the floor with a spatula. I end up in A&E for a bit. So that was my incidents with a window. And I didn't break anything, thankfully.
Really?
Which I was really fortunate with. No, yeah. I didn't. I only got a cut on my pinky finger, and that was it. Wow. It was probably the alcohol that helped.
I'm not surprised, actually, if you were drinking that much.
Yeah. And then I had really bad bruising all up the back of my legs, and I was limping for months. And then it was about half a year later, I was back at the window ledge again, just doing my normal thing, you know, typing away, looking out in the streets of London.
Yeah.
And my colleague / mate comes over to me, and she does the whole like push and catch save your life thing.
Yeah,
like the got you, that thing. And yeah.
Oh, no.
And she did the push part. She didn't do the grab back part. And so during the middle of the bloody working day, I get pushed out the same window again.
What?
And that was the same window, same spot. And that was the second MacBook that I destroyed in my workplace.
Did the watch go off that time as well?
Yes, it did.
Oh, no.
Yes, it bloody did.
I'm surprised I let you near it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not going to be for the benefit of anyone else listening, but I had someone take a whole bunch of photos of me when I was in A&E.
I've got to see this.
For the benefit of the listeners, I'm bringing them up now to show you.
Yes,
it's just, it is glorious. Yeah. Oh, God, summer party. There we go. So, this is me in hospital. with a neck brace on. Yep.
Wow.
And you can see there, that's my Apple Watch, completely intact.
Oh, it looks fine. You just look destroyed. Yep. Jeez. Yep. That is horrible.
Yeah, I had a rough day.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did you hope on the second time?
That time I had a bit more injury. Yeah, but yeah. Thankfully I didn't actually do a clean break. I had a bit of slight damage, but it wasn't a clean break, so that was good.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, do they let you near windows now, or have they sort of got you locked up somewhere?
So, my last workplace, they didn't know about the second time. No, the first time, sorry. They didn't know about the first time because it was late at night. But they knew about the second time. We pretended that the second time was the first time it happened.
Oh, my God.
We need to edit this bit out. Crap.
Well, they know now.
Great,
know
everyone now. Listening to this, for potential future like hirers are going to think, geez, he's a liability.
Or just an interesting guy.
So... but I told Pando, like, when I joined Pando, I did an introduction presentation one lunch and then spoke about myself, and part of the introduction thing was, hey, I fell out of a window twice. And since then we've moved to an office on a floor down to make sure that if I am near a window, I don't fall as much. and they've positioned me away from windows. I asked to be by the window in our new seating area when we moved office, and they were like, no, you're sitting in the middle of the office, you are not being put near a window.
I think that's probably for the best, for your own good as well as everyone else's, to be honest with you.
Yeah, talk about my bloody luck, yeah.
So, I mean, that sort of covers the loyalty to Apple, because, I mean, I'm assuming Android make their own watch, right? Like, there must be a Samsung watch or something. I mean, would that save your life? Probably not, right?
I don't know. Probably not. Probably just go, nope, sorry, ran out of memory, need to reboot.
See, there you go. Thank God for... Look, I mean, right, back onto sort of a serious note, right? You're a mobile lead, you're a young guy, you're, what, 23, 24? And, you know, I'm not sure how long you've been sort of professionally working within development, but it's not that long. So how does one sort of progress and develop the way that you have in such a short space of time and become sort of a guy that's leading a team of developers underneath it, both on the Android and iOS side?
Yeah, so I've been an engineer for just over 3 years now.
Wow, yeah.
And it's been a wild ride.
Yeah, I can tell.
I was expecting to be where I am at this point in my life.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's actually quite hard to deal with. And it's, I sound like such a privileged twat saying that, but it kind of is, because I think to myself, is this it now? Have I peaked? Like, is it all downhill from here?
Nah.
Is this what happened? Like, I've reached this stage early on, and now I'm like, great, do I retire now? Like, what do I do next? Like, I've peaked. But yeah, in terms of like how you get into that, it's tough. Part of it, I would say, would be sometimes for me things click and they make sense, when other times they may not right away for other people, and that's fine, right? We're all good experts in our own areas, and we need to learn in different areas.
True.
And for me, those things that have clicked happened to align in the right way, that meant that someone thought I was suitable for this position.
Right, yeah.
And part of the thing that's helped me with that would be to stay humble.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because I find with engineers, the more senior you get, the more open you are about saying, I have no idea what the answer to this is.
Right, yeah.
When you start makes out in the industry and you're like a young, fresh-faced programmer, you're like, I know everything. I can solve the world. Like, I can just AI everything. Oh, I'll just throw everything on the blockchain. I've got this in the bag.
Right.
And actually, we don't know, like, pretty much any of the answers. Otherwise, we'd have, like, flying cars already. We have no idea what we're doing. We're improvising every day as it comes along. And that's what I found when you I hate the phrase move up the ranks in inverted commas.
Yeah.
You are more open with going, actually, I have no idea. I don't know the answer to that. I can find out. I can give you a rough idea in a couple of hours or a couple of days. But right now, I have no idea. And it's something that I try and encourage within my team as well, is with software engineering, some tasks that seem really, really complex, stupidly complex and impossible, take like one line of code and it's bizarre. And sometimes something that seems really, really simple, that it should just be a couple of seconds, ends up taking weeks because it turns out to be this monster of a problem.
Yeah.
And it's something that I try to encourage in my team is, hey, this stuff happens, that's software.
Yeah.
That's fine, right? Just be open and honest about that.
Yeah.
And that's something that's always worked for me going into a career in engineering, is being humble and honest and saying, okay, sure, I'll have a stab at it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'll find out. And having that honesty and transparency has built that respect.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, even if you don't know the answer, as long as you sort of know how to figure out the answer, you're on the right sort of track there.
Yeah. And it's about building that trust and respect. Trust is a very delicate and fragile thing to build, and that stems in all walks of life, right? From friendships, interpersonal connections, to working in your job. People need to be able to trust and believe in you, and being young and fresh to the game, you'd walk in and you'd be like, yeah, I got this done, can get it done in a day, and then turns out to take like a couple of weeks, and you've chipped away at that trust. But by acknowledging your humanity, the limitations that you have as being a human, which means you're going to fail, and you're going to fail a lot, actually builds more trust, because other people can empathize with you and recognize, hey, yeah, I fail a lot every single day too, and I learn from that. And this other person is also being honest with me and showing vulnerability by being honest that they also have limitations too, and they can learn from that, and you build up trust, and ultimately that's how you, once again, I hate the phrase in inverted commas, move up the ranks, increase in seniority. I hate these phrases that we have in this industry, but part of that is being able to recognize where you need to learn and grow, your limitations, the areas that you're good at, the areas you're not good at or you need to work on, and having other people be able to trust in you and you to trust in other people, because it's a two-way
yeah.
street. So that way you can, yeah, lead.
Yeah.
I hate that phrase.
I know you hate it, but I don't think you're one of those boring sort of leadership types, so don't worry about
that.
Yeah, so look, what I want to know is, for you, your sort of journey in technology obviously hasn't been that long, but obviously you've been interested in tech for years, I imagine. What are some of the biggest things that have changed sort of in the industry since you've been working in it, since you've been sort of immersing yourself in it? What's changed that's noticeable, really?
Yeah, so I would say the biggest thing that's changed and progressed massively in tech is not actually the tech, it's the people and our culture and our philosophy as an overall industry. Our industry has weirdly become massive flag bearers for civil and human rights.
Yeah.
And we're in a weird but also fortunate position that these giant corporations like Apple, Microsoft and Google and Amazon and so on,
yeah,
less or so Amazon to be fair with their warehouses, but like these big corporations are really like saying no, like we're not gonna just create a piece of software for a police agency to unlock any phone and access any person's data. No, we're not gonna do that. No, we're not gonna add backdoors to encryption.
Yeah.
Yes, people should be able to express who they want to be and be their own person and live their life how they want to live their life, love who they want to love. Like, we are in a weird situation where big corporations are actually our biggest proponents for civil liberties and not our governments around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, if you look, like, 10 years ago, it wasn't as big, but it is in the past, like, 10 years that suddenly tech is no longer just tech. Tech is the tech stuff we do, but then also each of us playing our role to drive forward society and how we interact with each other and effectively picking up the slack in driving forward our civil liberties that isn't being driven in the areas where it should be by other people whose jobs it should be to do that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, you can put whatever, like, fancy camera you want on your phone and have whatever great to-do list app you want, but the biggest change that we've had in tech is that tech is no longer about tech. No. Tech does far more and really challenges and holds accountable people that should already be holding each other accountable anyway.
Yeah. It's crazy to think, actually, because, I mean, these guys that came up with these apps like Google and that, like, 20-odd years ago, they had no idea that they were going to be such a massive, you know, make such a massive impact on the world, be a part of everyone's life daily. It must be such a burden to bear, really, knowing that, you know, your decisions probably do more to affect people than the government do, and that probably wasn't even your intention to begin with. That's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and it's scary in the opposite way, because we're lucky that the decisions they're making about where they believe we should be progressing as a society align with how we feel, because if they were to try and push in a different direction and say, hey, yeah, no encryption for anyone, everything is open, where are governments that should be driving forward our civil liberties? Like, if they're not doing that, then there's a power vacuum and these people can be deciding that for us. So we're lucky that right now in this point of time, they're making these decisions that align with how we feel as individuals, but that doesn't guarantee that in the future they are going to align. And we're fortunate that they are being those flag bearers, but it's a weird situation and almost scary that we are dependent on tech companies to be driving this.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we've sort of touched on it briefly. But, I mean, in terms of the future, I mean, where do you see tech going, really? Where do you see technology advancing to over the next sort of, say, 5-10 years, right? And not just sort of the AI, AR, VR sort of revolution that we seem to be going through now. Because, I mean, we see sort of virtually everything that's going that way. I mean, you can go onto Google and, you know, look at a pair of shoes in front of you if you want to see that using technology. But, I mean, what is some useful technology that, you know, you see around the corner, really?
Yeah, it's a bit of a chicken and egg dilemma, right? Because with AR and VR, VR, like, pretty good use case for games, even though you have sort of like these weird harnesses and setups and treadmills to allow you to move around, which just look crazy. But with AR, it is a chicken and egg problem, whereby the current hardware that we have is crap. It's not a good experience. It's like, it's brilliant for what it's trying to do with the current technology that we have, but we're very far off of perfect, and having just a generally seamless experience. But if we're not developing it now, when will we develop it? I would love to see a future whereby I can be walking down the street and I can just see a marker in front of me that tells me the street I need to be taking for directions. That to me would be like a crazy future. And even small stuff, like if you're in a supermarket and you see like, oh, this is 25% off for four, or you can get 2-for-1, and you don't need to do inside your head the calculations of which one is most cost effective. Like, you could just look at it and it calculates the unit price for you and presents it to you there. Like, stuff like that, these really small inconveniences in your life, I would love to see a future where it could just do that for you. But that is a long way off. But unless we're actually gonna stick the feathers in the chicken, we're not gonna get an egg. It's a very weird mental image there.
Yeah, I'm getting it. Yeah, so you're sort of saying that basically we can't have the good tech, the good uses for tech, without sort of the trivial, maybe not trivial, but maybe not the not as useful things, as it were, right?
Well, yeah, so, like, if you compare, like, the first phone, the mobile phone, rather, was, like, a brick that you held, and like, that was really novel at the time, and everyone thought it was great because we had nothing to compare it to. And then you look at, like, what we have now with the iPhone, and the stupid amount of processing power it has, and arguably also the stupid amount of cameras it has in it as well. And you compare that between the two, and you're like, how did we get here? Like, the brick thing is why did we do that? Why didn't we just go to that? The difficulty we have with modern innovation is that we have, like, this luxury privilege baseline where we have, like, this AR glasses that we'll put on, and we'll be like, why isn't this just as good as the phone? Why is it so juttery? Why is it laggy when I turn my head? Like, why do I need to have an external thing render it? Like, it's crap. It's like, in a way, yeah, it is. We'll look back at that in a couple of decades and go, yeah, that's crap. But we're in a privileged situation where we have other things to compare it to, and we want it to be further ahead than it is.
Yeah, we're sort of being sport brats there. Okay, so look, future of tech sort of discussed. Kind of. What about the future of Sean Merchant? Where do you see yourself in the next couple of years or 5 years?
I see myself falling out of another window at least.
Yeah.
And probably living in a yurt, tending to a delightful herd of llamas and living my best life. I don't know. I really don't know. And this is the weird thing with tech, is that it changes so quickly. It's really hard to keep up.
Yeah.
You just look a few years ago, and like, Node.js wasn't a thing, and now suddenly, like, we have a whole sector dedicated to Node.js. So I don't know. I have no idea. In 5 years' time, a new platform may be released that may eclipse Apple, Google, and Microsoft combined, right? We thought that BlackBerry was going to be around forever, and look at it now, right? Like, these giants that we thought would always be around, they're no longer there. So
yeah.
Who knows? We may have a new platform spring up that may just eclipse everyone.
So you know, you might not even be a mobile lead. You might be like a, I don't know, there might be a different sort of device out in 5 years' time that makes everything sort of pointless.
Well, like, last thing, we thought about it. We thought the same thing with BlackBerry. But like we thought BlackBerry had like reached the peak. Like it had this like great keyboard that you'd type on and like you could message each other, and like what more did you want? Like it everything worked. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like we look at our current tech and our phones and we think like, how can it get any better than this? Like,
yeah.
Surely we've peaked. And yet somehow we people much, much smarter than me will think of something and create a platform that we never saw coming.
Yeah.
Because if you'd showed like some person 20 years ago the phone I'm holding up now, which people listening to this can't see, but if you showed people like the iPhone 11 Pro like 20 years ago, they wouldn't be able to connect the dots and think that. Like,
yeah.
How do we get there?
Yeah,
it would blow people's minds, and that's going to be the same thing in 20 years' time. If someone came back and showed me the tech that we have then, it would blow my mind as well.
Yeah. Wow. Blown my mind there, thinking about all the possibilities of tech and AR and AI and everything like that. Yes, it's a scary thing to think about the future, but definitely a cool thing as well. I think we're really living in probably the best time there is. We can remember when there wasn't much tech, but we can look forward to the future and sort of see what's out there. Okay, right, a couple of quick fire questions now for you now, Sean. So I think I know the answer to this already, but Apple or Android?
Apple.
Obviously, of course. You know, the one bit of advice you would give to a young engineer wanting to sort of develop his career and wanting to sort of get to where you are, really.
Be humble. Yeah, the internal belief system that I have is that like tech skills in terms of actually writing code. Yeah, that's fairly easy to teach. Problem solving. Well, we are all evolutionary beings. We all have the ability to solve problems. So it's something that we all have ingrained into us over the thousands and thousands of years of our evolution. Actually, like getting along with people and being engaged with other people and being humble, that core personality trait, that is something that takes a long, long time and investment to really hone and refine. And so for me, that would be the thing that I look for in terms of an engineer is, hey, can this person be humble? Can they be a good team player?
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, and when I speak to people and when we do interviews and we hire people, I always think, well, I could sit with this person for a couple of weeks and
yeah,
upskill them in tech and they're great to go because they're just an all-round just brilliant person with a great personality otherwise.
Yeah.
Compared to, could I spend a couple of years working with someone to improve their interpersonal skills? I sound like such an awful, selfish capitalist person here, but it's true. Like I could have like someone that's like a brilliant coder, but what makes an engineer isn't just code. What makes an engineer is being able to interact with other people. We're more than just the sum of our parts, and so for me, I would always prioritize someone that may not have the brilliant 10x, give me a brain aneurysm, the 10x engine coder thing. I would much rather find someone that just has a really great personality, fantastic to get along with,
yeah,
and work with them to brush up the tech skills.
That's a really, really nice answer to that question, actually, and a good way to sort of draw this podcast to a close there. Look, been great to have you on. definitely want to get you on here again, maybe with something more specific in terms of topic. There are many topics I'm sure we could discuss for that for absolutely hours, and hopefully we will continue to do so. But look, thanks very much, Sean, for coming on the podcast. It's been great, and hopefully we will we'll catch up soon and try and do this again. But yeah, for now, thanks so much for coming on, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me.
No worries.
Look at that, a clean edit. You could just cut that 5 seconds.
Or I could leave it in.